Hi there, and welcome back to Talent Takes Time, the podcast series I hope will help you navigate your way through the stress and the pain of a career in sports media. I'm Alison Bender, a sports broadcaster with over 20 years' experience in TV and radio. If you're not familiar with my work or you're just discovering this podcast, I've worked for the likes of Sky Sports, Real Madrid and Chelsea Football Club, ESPN and a whole host of other leading sports companies and brands. I've produced this podcast speaking with inspirational people from across the media to find out how they made a career in what's a challenging industry. Wow, what a lot has happened since I launched Series 1. First of all, thank you for all the great support and feedback. I absolutely love hearing how it's helping you. If you haven't listened to it, then please do go back through our archive where you can listen to some great stories from those who've enjoyed success in their careers. So I'm starting this new series by speaking with a former sportswoman who made her name in football before retiring to become a public speaker and activist. I'm not lying when I tell you, the moment I met Abby Wambach, it was like a punch to the gut. Wow, this girl is so cool, I thought. Abby has always done it her way, not conforming to the rest. As Abby tells us in her book, Wolfpack, she was never Little Red Riding Hood. She was the wolf. Most of the people I interview on Talent Takes Time share their tales of making it in sports presenting, punditry or reporting. For Abby, though, she shares with us the dreaded moment she tried punditry for the very first time and the impact it had on her life.
So this was like a massive learning experience because I sucked at it. I was terrible. I mean, in fact, I would call myself the very worst pundit that ever pundited.
But what Abby didn't know at the time is that this moment would change her life forever. Let me take you back to 2016 in Paris, where I first met Abby. I was presenting at the European Championships for ESPN, and she'd been hired as the first female pundit and analyst ESPN would use for coverage of the men's game. Abby had just retired from football as a World Cup winner, as the top scoring footballer for her national team, USA, with 184 goals, the most goals of any male or female in the game at that point. She was sitting in the green room signing copies of her book, Forward. I didn't know it at the time, but I would later go on to read this book, having got to know Abby a little over my 6 weeks with her in Paris. It's raw, open, heartbreaking at times, and really inspired me to be more honest in my own autobiography. As she sat in the green room signing books, she picked one up and, excuse my language, scribbled, "Fuck off, love Abby." "You can't do that," I said. Her eyes lit up and she shot me a look. "Yes, I can. This is the most special book in the pile. The person who receives this will know that."
I hate signing tons of autographs. It's like my least favorite thing to do on the planet, but I do it. And I knew that no matter who opened this book, they would be a fan. And a fan of mine knows that I will do and say what comes into my brain. And, you know, I'm sure that the publishers probably pulled it out because they were like, "What the hell is this? What is this? Bad word."
But that was Abby. What you see is what you get. She made an instant impression on me. I just loved chatting with Abby, as she seemed like the poster girl of someone who was comfortable in their own skin and knew exactly what she wanted from life. It reminds me so much of a movie, a film I just watched the other day, Soul, the Disney film. I don't know if you've seen it, but does that resonate with you?
Oh my gosh. I watched that movie a couple weeks ago with my kids. I think of it two or three times a day because there are so many different ways that people attack life, right? There are so many different roads people go down or decisions and life choices we make that essentially turns our life into what our life experience is.
It's one of the things I always tell young people. Finding a job you love is so important because you can work hard at it and it doesn't really matter because it's bringing you joy and not depleting you. So knowing yourself is the first important step. I was curious to know when Abby had this epiphany.
Well, I think in 2010, 2011 is when I started to like truly accept who I was. You know, I had done many campaigns for companies as an endorsed athlete. I had long hair. I would wear what they wanted me to wear. And then all of a sudden I just started to realize, you know what? That makes me inside of myself, inside of my skin, feel uncomfortable. And I was doing that to please the accepted form of beauty that all of us have come to understand what is. And I mean, what the hell does that even mean? I just think that generalities and the way that the marketed athlete slash famous person the pressure that is on a player in my position who, you know, I wasn't making millions of dollars. I was struggling, you know, I was struggling financially to be a professional athlete. So I didn't want to X out or make my life harder off the field because so much of my livelihood depended on those marketing dollars that I was getting from companies. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to hide my sexuality. I'm going to dress how they want me to dress. And I'm going to say what they want me to say because I need to feed myself and I need to pay my rent, my mortgage eventually when I bought a house. So all of these things are really at play and important. And I think in 2011, when I scored that goal, against Brazil, the fame of my life completely changed. And I felt like I had the ability, not just financially, but I had earned enough clout, publicly speaking, to be myself because I scored that goal as myself. And that is now what the world would expect of me, right? So as soon as I started accepting who I was, not just my sexuality, but like really like who I was and who I wanted to like dress at, like what I wanted my identity to be. And when I stepped into that authentically, my life totally changed because then companies have been coming to me going, that is exactly what we want though, you know? And so I started to align myself with organizations that wanted that part of who I was. I just never thought that kind of non-traditional form of beauty would ever be accepted.
And that is exactly what companies want, authenticity. And with that, Abby shines. As her now wife, Glennon Doyle, puts it, it's about your particular beauty that stands in stark contrast to the manufactured beauty that women have been sold. It's something I noticed myself when I first met Abby. She is the woman who enters the room and everyone turns. The way she carries herself screams, I am comfortable to be me. The moment I met you, you had a beauty shining out from you. And it wasn't coming from, you know, high heels and a dress and a tight skirt or whatever it is. Like you say, the manufactured image. It was something from within you, behind your eyes, the way you are. And I don't know how you get that. If you could bottle that, Abby, I mean, just explain to us, how do you, you know, how do you be that way?
Well, thank you. That's so sweet. I don't know. I feel like if you were to have met me before this time, you would probably have met a person, and I'm talking about like 2010, you met a person that you knew you felt like was good, but was hiding something, that there was something that wasn't completely, truly authentic. So maybe what you see when you look at me is somebody living their authentic self and living completely integrated. And there might be a part of you or part of somebody else out there that thinks, oh gosh, that looks so freeing and that looks so lovely. Maybe I should try that. So those little girls now can look at me and look at a Megan Rapinoe and see a short-haired woman going out there doing amazing things, being badass, and also being able to be successful off the field, right? In terms of accepting who I was, that is when my insides started to match my outsides. I don't know how I get that. I think sobriety is absolutely my pathway to that and to feeling completely integrated. I know everybody has a different philosophy and path than mine. But I feel like stepping into your full self is the only way to having or even having a chance at a good life.
It's something Abby has worked on over time. I recently listened to her podcast with Glennon, We Can Do Hard Things, where she speaks of the term, this is not her own this time, calibration, the process by which you get your insides to match your outsides. I guess life is all about doing this, and we're gradually becoming the person we're supposed to be. I'll admit, I'm not quite there yet. I feel the person most people see is not the person I feel like I am, but it's hard to express all that we are in a limited sphere. A really good friend of mine was recently chatting to me and spoke about the version of myself I put on TikTok. I really loved hearing him say that. He knows it is a version of me, not me. Before we get into her off-field career, I wanted to understand more of what it meant to Abby to be a footballer. And so we spoke a bit about that. And her answer honestly surprised me.
Well, I hate to say this, but most footballers, especially if you get into your 30s, are not playing the game because you love it anymore. You're playing the game because it's offering you something else, whether it be financial security, or for me, it was a self-esteem, right? I found myself, the way that people watched me, the affirmation I got, the self-esteem that football and soccer gave me was the reason why I played. It wasn't because I was making tons of money. And I think that that's a really important thing to first say. I know that might not be like the romantic ideal that we have about footballers and their relationships with the game, but at some point a job becomes a job and it still is giving you something, right? The fame and doing it on such a level and representing my country was a really big deal to me. But I definitely don't think that I would say that I loved it, especially towards the end. It was just, you know, when you're 35 years old, it's hard. It's like hard to stay fit all the time. It's hard to stay motivated. It's hard to be, you know, because I wanted to play sports and do it at the best of my ability, right? So that became more of the drive than the love of the game. But I think that when I look back at my life, my teammates are the ones that pulled me through. I do not miss playing soccer. I miss the environment. I miss the people. I miss that, that energy that is so hard to replicate of these 23 type A badass, excuse the expression, women who all believe that they're the best in the world. And when you find yourself in an environment like that, it's almost literally like you feel like you can do anything.
I just love this honesty from Abby, and in all the years I've interviewed countless footballers, I've never been able to receive this kind of openness. Perhaps it's easier to reflect now that she's retired. I guess for you, you're very lucky because you had that pack, you had your teammates from a really early age, and then when you gave up football, I guess that pack suddenly had vanished. Did you feel a little bit on your own at that point?
Yeah. Nobody talks about transitions in life enough, I don't think. It's kind of like we don't pay enough attention to the older generations of our world. It's like when we don't want to be conscious that we get old and die as human beings. And for me, the transition from soccer to quote unquote a normal life was so hard because it's like this Band-Aid that gets ripped off of being around people, having a job, having your road mapped out for you. You have a support system that is helping you achieve this goal. And then all of a sudden the Band-Aid gets ripped off and there's like silence. And you yourself have to fill that void. You yourself have to figure out what it is next that you will do, that you will undertake. I feel that the void and that silence is almost louder or bigger because of the place that I just left, you know? So I had these huge expectations to fill based on my previous life.
So now with a better idea of where Abby was, let me take you back to when I first met her. It was 2016 in Paris at the Euros, Abby living her truly authentic self. She is who she is, and she enters the studios for the very first time. She's wearing ripped jeans and has a short, sharp peroxide cut. Her arm's muscular and she's wearing brand new trainers. She's clearly made a big effort to look smart in her authentic way. One of the other pundits remarks that she's not dressed smart enough. Where does she think she's going? We've all worn a suit, he said. I tried to explain, but it was falling on deaf ears. Surely it's more appropriate to be your authentic self as a recently retired athlete, trainers and jeans, than force yourself into heels and a suit and feel uncomfortable. I often feel this on a football pitch. Over many years as a football reporter, it's been the uniform to wear boots or heels, but it just feels so wrong marching across a pristine pitch in heels, and I'm often watched very closely by the groundsman. Lately, trainers are becoming very much the norm, and I like that. Anyway, back to the story. Abby walked into those ESPN studios having never done this kind of thing before.
Yeah, you met me in kind of the worst time of my life. I mean, for lack of a better way of saying it, I had just retired. I'd signed this deal with ESPN that felt really good to me because it gave me a little financial security. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to pay my mortgage. So when this opportunity came up, I was really excited about it. And, you know, I had walked into, for the last 6 months, I had walked into every situation and I just showed up as myself. And that's how I wanted to present. I didn't want to be the most educated pundit. I didn't want to be the person who even knew very much about men's soccer, because that is actually very true. Being an American, I didn't grow up watching men's soccer. And I know some of the guys, but I didn't know nearly, I didn't study nearly enough to get a word in edgewise. So I found myself, you know, at the Euros with you and with all these other talent pundits. They're just incredible and so educated and so knowledgeable, right? So this was like a massive learning experience because I sucked at it. I was terrible. I mean, in fact, I would call myself the very worst pundit that ever pundited. Look, I'm not an idiot. I mean, I know when I do well at things and I know when I don't. This doesn't mean this is going to be the story of my commentating life. Like, I absolutely believe that there will be a time where I find myself excited and wanting to maybe go back into that realm.
This was a very important moment in Abby's life, even if she didn't know it at the time. Abby had always been good at stuff, the best. Suddenly, she was out of her comfort zone, struggling, and struggling to a global audience. In her personal life, she'd been having a tough time too, and social media used it as a stick to beat her with. She'd recently retired from football, struggled keeping the weight off, battling addiction, and had been charged with a DUI.
By the way, I was going through divorce. I was going through the transition of my career, and I was getting sober. You know, I had just had a driving under the influence arrest in the United States, which is the most embarrassing and worst thing that ever happened to me. But I'm like a month or two sober at this point. So I'm like still trying to figure out, like, I'm like a newborn baby. And then I throw myself on TV like, oh, good luck. Like you'll figure it out. Right. And quite frankly, I feel like ESPN absolutely could have done a much better job preparing me for it.
But I just loved how Abby dealt with the situation. She approached me and asked to do an interview. She wanted to get there first, to say, this is not for me, but I tried. Not shying away from the uncomfortable truth that this was not for her. Not now, not like this. Abby didn't know it at the time, but this rock bottom would be the start of a brand new life she never knew she'd have. Abby would earn multiples as a speaker and author than she ever did as a player. Abby would marry Glennon Doyle, have a family, be a mother, and Abby would have a new role, not Abby the footballer, but Abby, the leader. She'd met her wife-to-be just before our meeting at a book conference. Struggling with telling her truth in her own book, Glennon had helped her.
I was struggling because at the time I had just gotten this DUI. I didn't know if I was going to include it in the book. I didn't know how to tell that story. And I just asked her, I was like, I just don't know what to do. You know, I feel like my life is over because I just ruined it all and I'm never going to work again in the business world because nobody wants to attach themselves with somebody who got a DUI. Like, how do I do this? And she just said, you tell the truth and you don't tell pieces of the truth. You tell the full truth all the way through. And that was one of the most important pieces of advice I've ever gotten, because had I not done that, then I would have to remember, first of all, what the story that I told was and make that the story. But then I would have lost a little piece of myself. And in sobriety, like really all sobriety means is peace. And if I feel like I'm not completely integrated in my insides and my outsides, then I don't feel like I'm living my best life. And so, yeah, at the time when I was writing that book, I was so stressed and worried about what it would look like to tell the full truth. But the truth is, when you start owning who you are and all of who you are, the shame actually falls away, because what you find is when you say, I did this, or this is what I feel, you will be amazed at how many people show up and say, me too. Because you're a human being. And there is no thing that has ever happened in your life that somebody else has not experienced or felt.
And so Abby decided to tell it all, open herself up. And that meeting with Glennon turned out to be far more life-changing than she'd ever know. Glennon accepted Abby for who she was, not Abby the footballer, but Abby the person. She explained all this in a letter she wrote for Abby. I don't think the magic was on the field, Abby, Glennon wrote. I think the magic was inside of you. I think you'll carry it with you until the day you die. From out here, Abby, it's crystal clear that soccer didn't make you special. You made soccer special. You have lost nothing. You'll take it all with you. Glennon really saw Abby and helped her to see herself. Glennon, by the way, was in her own marriage to a man, the father of her children, and so things were complex, as Abby explained to me, referring to the time when they met at a book conference just before I met Abby myself.
She sat next to me. We talked for maybe a few minutes, and then she went home and I went home, and we started emailing, and it was like, wait, what's going on here? We both had marriages that we had to unwind from. We had a lot of kind of like baggage that we had to sort out before we could come back together and be with each other. And we did that because we needed to make sure that we were doing this with like complete integrity.
If you're interested in reading Glennon's side of this meeting with Abby, I would highly recommend her book, Untamed. For anyone feeling like their life isn't quite going in the right direction or feeling restless with what they've chosen, Glennon shows us there is another way.
Hi, I'm Gary Hayes and I produce Talent Takes Time with Alison. I'm just interrupting this episode with an opportunity for any listeners currently looking to break into the media. Now, if you're enjoying this series, you might be interested in some of Alison's free tips. Alongside the Football Writers Association, the FWA, Alison's put together advice and steps to pursue a career in sports media so that you know where to start. Now, if you want to pick up this free guide, just visit her website, alisonbender.com. She has 20 plus years in the media as a producer, journalist, reporter, and a presenter, so has some great advice to give. And she's sharing all of this for free. So if you're serious about your career, you should get this guide now. A reminder of the web address, it's alisonbender.com. It contains everything you need to get yourself going. So good luck, and now let's get back into the episode.
Welcome back to Talent Takes Time. So far, we've heard about Abby Wambach's acceptance of who she is, allowing her insides to match her outsides, and meeting the woman she would soon marry. In this podcast, I speak with people who've had success in their chosen area, and I'm always fascinated to see how each individual defines success.
Success to me is a daily integration of doing something that you feel like makes you have a win. To celebrate some sort of little, and it might be a momentary, like, ooh, good job, right? And if you can do this on a micro level, like on a day-to-day level, you're going to be able to do it on a longer-term level because today is the day. If we can do today, again tomorrow, again and again in a consistent way, we're going to continually find successes. And then your definitions will keep changing based on your relative wherever you are in your life. Other things that I do is if I can work out, and then there's a caveat to this, if I can work out every single day, giving myself one day off a week, no matter what happens in the rest of the day, I'm good. Like everything else is fine. So my family, we call it eating the frog. And essentially what the whole concept of eating the frog is doing the thing you least want to do in your day first. So that no matter what happens for the rest of the day, you're good. Like you feel solid, like you've accomplished something. In America, I don't know if this is the way that it is over in Europe, there's a ton of talk on work-life balance, right? And I just kind of think that that's crap. I do. I think that it's like, it's just our life, right? And though work is an essential part of our life, we have to integrate our work life with our home and personal life. Like that's just the way that it has to happen. And there is no such thing as balance because like you said, there's going to be certain weeks that you're going to be so on with work and there has to be a cost to that.
Abby is referring to something I said to her, something I do to make my life less stressful, creating a way not to judge yourself day by day, but over a week, because frankly, there's just not enough time in a day to do all the things we need to do for a balanced life. This is a much longer episode of my podcast because frankly, Abby is just such a wonderful speaker. And I also wanted to share with you some of the incredible messages from her book, Wolfpack. I often talk about how some of our most successful moments are born out of some of our lowest ones. And the same is true of Abby. ESPN punditry did not work out for her at that time. She wasn't given the support and hadn't realised the preparation that was required. But her bloody-minded belief in being true to herself led her to a career she never realised she would have. Another such moment of epiphany came for her at the ESPY Awards. Abby was standing on stage with American footballer Peyton Manning and the late Kobe Bryant, NBA legend. All were on stage to receive the iconic ESPY Award. It's like an Oscars for sport. Abby was out of her comfort zone, having to speak on stage in front of a huge national television audience with a teleprompter and the lights in her eyes. But she was herself and delivered the perfect speech.
I killed it. I said the lines perfectly. But I just remember standing on that stage. The lights were on and I was holding that trophy in my hands. And I just was like, wow, here we are. We women, we are finally getting the recognition that we have so long deserved, right? And the camera turned off and the lights turned off and our segment was over. So the three of us turned to walk off stage. And what was supposed to be the best night of my life, I was supposed to go and celebrate with all the celebrities and all the famous people, it actually ended up turning into the most profound, purposeful moment, because I got back, I told my driver, I said, just take me back to the hotel. I don't want to go out. And I sat in the hotel, just like pacing, trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Essentially this was like the bookend to my career, like almost like the last award that I would be getting. And I realized I spent my whole career just being grateful. I realized, like, I had spent that entire night on that stage, the gratitude was the only thing that I exhibited through my career. I realized when the three of us turned to walk off that stage, we were walking into three very different retirements. Their, you know, biggest concern was where they were going to invest their hundreds of millions of dollars that they collectively earned. Rightfully so. Nobody's trying to take their money. But mine, and this is true, I've said this earlier, I was stressing trying to figure out how the hell I was going to pay my mortgage. How could there be such a vast gap between three people who are just given the same exact award for the same sacrifices, for the same blood, for the same sweat? How could there be such a gap? There is nobody that is immune. There is no woman on the planet that is immune to this specific thing. And so I promised myself that I would do everything in my power to make sure that I would fight for the voiceless, that I would work for the rest of my life trying to equal the pay equity issues that we see in my country, in the U.S. and globally. And so this night, though it was really hard and troublesome, became the night that I found the rest of my life's purpose. Often when you can sit a little with your heartbreak, you will likely find your life's purpose.
It's so poignant hearing Abby say this. Shortly after recording this conversation, Abby helped win a legal victory over the US Soccer Federation for equal pay. A settlement and a payout were agreed, and now every man and woman in US soccer will receive equal pay. It's absolutely seismic. It means that sportswomen who come after her will not have to worry about paying their mortgages and finding other careers like Abby had to.
I've actually been able to make 10 times more money in my retirement than I ever did as a footballer. Obviously, I'm not complaining now. But I think it's so important that women especially talk about their financial situations. I don't know if I'm going to be like walking in 10, 15, 20 years based on what I was doing to my body and the stress I put it under. I headed the ball a lot. I'm terrified of my brain prognosis over the next 20 or 30 years. You know, I didn't have a retirement plan. I don't have a retirement plan from US soccer.
It's strange to think, but perhaps Abby would never have been a leader or a speaker if things had turned out differently, if she'd made her riches in football or made it as a pundit at ESPN. Abby has written a book, Wolfpack, and I would urge you to read it. Later on in this series, I'll include a bonus episode with Abby where she explains Wolfpack a little more. She's taken a whole load of rules that we were born into and turned them into new rules. The fact that women feel they should be grateful, she believes, is damaging. Women can be grateful, yet demanding. That's the new rule. I honestly could listen to Abby for hours, and so I'm grateful she gave us so much of her time. There I go, grateful and demanding. I want to end with a message from Abby, which I think is so incredibly powerful. We are all defined by something. For me, it's my job as a presenter, or the mum of my kids, depending on who you talk to, and we allow ourselves to comfortably fit into the mould. For Abby, that definition for many years was record goal scorer, and I wanted to know how it felt when that went away. I want to talk about, obviously, your legacy as a footballer, as a goal scorer, and I want you to be really honest, because you always are, about how it felt when Christine Sinclair did finally overtake that goal scoring record.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, there was kind of like much like there was when I was going through the process of trying to surpass Mia's record. There was just like a lot of hoopla, right? So in my Instagram feed or Twitter feed, a lot of Canadian fans just so excited to finally get a one up on Team USA. Right. And so knowing that that is happening, that there's like an energy swirling around this, I sat down with my team and I was like, my current team, the one that I think of ideas and business ideas and go after them with, I truly, deeply, actually believe that records are meant to be broken. Does it make me sad because now when I get introduced for speeches, they don't say the leading record goal scorer of the world, both male or female, of international goals, right? There's a little piece of me that's like, oh man, that was actually something that made me feel good every single time when I heard it. When I was being introduced for something, that thing was something that I was really proud of. Because, you know, scoring 84 goals, I'm proud of every single one of those goals because I know how fleeting that time was. I know how it very easily could have never happened. However, that all being said, you know, when I look back at my career, it is not that record that shapes my mind, that even comes into my mind.
Just before I prepare for this interview, my six-year-old boy, who you actually met when we were at the Euros, he was just a baby. He was super excited about this and he always likes to help me with these things. And I said, all right, what would you want to ask Abby if you had one question? I actually love his question so much. I'm going to read it out. So he says, how do you feel now compared with how you felt as a football player? And I thought that was quite good from a six-year-old.
I love that. It's so beautiful. It's such a great question because maybe people know this, but being a footballer, you have to have a singular focus. You have to have one mind. You have to be so focused on this one thing that, like I said earlier, that everything else in your life kind of suffers. You don't get to explore different parts of who you are because you have to focus on this one thing and everything is leading in this direction. So it's a very selfish path, unfortunately. And so now I am a much more well-rounded human being. That's true. Something that I'm proud of. It's something that did not come easy, by the way. I have had to work for every single thing that I feel good about in my life. And so I think that as a footballer, I knew that there was so much more to life than just soccer. And I think that because I knew that, I felt a little bit sad all the time as a footballer because I wasn't experiencing life in total.
And now you get to have it all.
Yeah, and now I just feel like I feel more grounded. I feel like my central nervous system has been able to calm down and not, you know, being the kind of ultimate competitor that I was, my happiness was hinged on whether we won or not, like for the rest of my life, happiness. So if we didn't win that World Cup, I don't know. I don't know if I would have been able to find any kind of peace. And that is not a way to live. Like, you can't live a life based on whether this thing works out or doesn't. Like, I have to be able to be happy no matter what. And then all this other stuff, you know, either it's filler, it's bonus material. And I think I've been able to do that. I've been able to create an existence for myself of contentment, that no matter what's coming today, that I know in the end I'm going to be good. And by the way, that is one of the most hardest things to create for a human life, is contentment. Not striving for that next thing, not looking to replace that void or that feeling with purchases or, you know, identity or food or whatever it is. Like, for me, that's super important.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. I'm Alison Bender, and this has been Talent Takes Time. Thanks for listening to this episode of Talent Takes Time. The series is written and presented by me, Alison Bender. Gary Hayes produces the podcast with me, and our consultant producers are Neil Pacchietto and Nick Lapworth. Talent Takes Time is part of the Highway 61 network. For more podcasts like this, head over to highway61.media. That's HWY61.media, where you can listen to narrative series across all sports. And remember, if you want some free advice from me and to download my free ebook with tips on getting into the industry, everything is available on my website, alisonbender.com. And make sure you follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You'll find me at alibender.tv.